Good morning. My name is Ellie Perka, and I'm counsel for Appellant CPI Pool. 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Thank you.
Before the court today is a pure question of law regarding the arbitrability of this dispute. The precise issue is whether or not the court can say with, quote, positive assurance that the claims brought by Longwell Arbors are not covered by the arbitration agreement. If the court cannot say this, then the appeal should be granted, as the motion to compel also should have been granted, leaving questions of interpretation of the arbitration agreement for the arbitrator to decide. It's important, as we emphasize in our briefing, to realize that we're not doing a contract interpretation analysis here. This is arbitrability, which is different. And the inquiry is this positive assurance test. So,
test do we use to look at the words of the stipulation to form some threshold understanding of it?
What test do we use?
Yeah, if we don't use the rules of contract interpretation before we apply the test about our firm conviction, what rules do we use?
Well, when I say we're not doing a contract interpretation, I just mean we don't need to decide exactly what the stipulation means. All the court needs to determine is whether or not there's a reasonable interpretation of that agreement that would cover the claims here.
To arrive at whether the interpretation you advance is reasonable, do we use contract rules of interpretation, or is there some other set of rules we use?
Certainly you would use contract rules of interpretation. I would agree with that.
So we basically use those rules to figure out whether you're in the ballpark, and then when we decide whether you're safe at first base or not, we have to have a firm conviction before we say you don't get an arbitration.
Sure, or a positive assurance.
I mean, I apologize for the fact that it's a sports metaphor, but
that's fine.
That's basically what you're telling us.
That's right. We don't have to get all the way to home base, so we don't need to decide exactly the court doesn't need to decide whether the claims are indeed subject to this clause. It just needs to be able to say that with positive assurance there can be an interpretation that would cover.
So if you reasonably can articulate why they are, then you get to have the arbitrator decide the question.
Correct. And
so what is that reasonable articulation?
Sure. So the reasonable articulation is that the clause, the paragraph, in the stipulation paragraph number 4 doesn't specifically call out and limit the arbitration agreement to the claims that were asserted in 2010. So if this agreement, if this paragraph here said, you know, cited the paragraph numbers in the complaint that were the causes of action that it was specifically limited to, that would be an entirely different scenario.
Let me ask about the claims that weren't yet asserted. Were they claims that could have been asserted, or are they only claims that could have arisen after the court entered an order based on this stipulation?
I don't, because all we've talked about in this case so far is arbitrability, I don't know the contours of Longwell Arbor's claims very well.
So conceivably these were claims that could have been asserted but were not asserted at the time the stipulation was signed?
Conceivably, but
is that reasonable to think that?
Sure. I mean, without knowing the precise nature of the claims.
I mean, you know more about the facts, I assume, than our record reflects.
Well, I was actually not counsel in 2010, so I know more, but my argument would be that it doesn't matter. So whether they were claims that existed at the time or that arose thereafter, this is broad enough to reasonably cover them.
So it's your view that if a claim could not have come into existence until after the stipulation was signed, the parties still contemplated, or you could at least reasonably assert the parties contemplated, that this arbitration agreement would cover those future claims?
Correct. And I would call the court's attention to the general descriptions that are included in the stipulation. So instead of just, you know, explicitly saying this claim that's asserted here, this claim that's asserted here. Instead, this paragraph says examples of financial accounting claims are problems and manipulation of capital accounts, improper withdrawals, improper payments. It's reasonable to argue that that was more broadly, that could be more broadly interpreted than just limited to that, those 2010 claims.
Isn't the financial claims, isn't that fairly specific, though?
I agree, that is fairly specific. And if that was all that existed here, I think, again, it would be a different scenario because there are these general examples that then follow that sentence. Again, I think we given the test that we're under with arbitrability, I think there's a reasonable interpretation here for coverage.
So who gets to decide what the means?
The arbitrator. And the court in Meat Cutters expressly says that if there are issues with regard to the interpretation of the clause, after this threshold...
Do you have a simpler answer? Doesn't paragraph 8 define who gets to decide that question?
Correct. Thank you, Your Honor. So under the case law and because the parties have expressly provided that in their agreement, that would be the decision. Another point of law is that the Washington courts are careful to point out that if there are doubts with regard to the arbitrability of a dispute, they should always be resolved in favor of arbitration. Again, we get that from the Meat Cutters case. Verbeek also tells us that, where the court says, quote, courts must indulge every presumption in favor of arbitration. And again, Kamaya says that as well. All inferences are to be drawn in favor of arbitration. So, again, we're not arguing here that these claims must be arbitrated. We're arguing that they are arbitrable. So there's an entirely reasonable progression that could happen here whereby this case would go to the arbitrator. Same issues would come up with regard to interpretation, and then the arbitrator would decide that issue. Thank you.
Morning. May it please the court. Excuse me. My name is Dan Lossing from Inslee Best in Bellevue. I'm here on behalf of the respondents, Longwell Arbors, Nanling Cheng, and Stanley Zhu. There's no question that arbitration is a favored means of resolving disputes in this state, but that doesn't answer the question. You can't be compelled to arbitrate an issue you haven't agreed to submit to arbitration. And the disputes in this matter, filed by Longwell, are not the same, and to your point, Judge Leach, were not evident. They didn't even arise until after the resolution of the prior issue.
Anything in the record that tells us when your client's claims arose?
The summons and complaint, Your Honor. I don't have it. I do have it.
From the summons and complaint, can we tell whether your client's claims are limited to conduct that occurred after the CR2A stipulation was signed?
Yes. Yes. Because what happened here was that, again, we're not talking about a broad arbitration clause that's in the underlying document. We have a 107-page operating agreement that doesn't have an arbitration clause in it. Back in 2010, CPI filed a lawsuit against Longwell seeking various kinds of...
How we got here.
Right.
And right, let me just cut to the chase here. You two have an argument about what paragraph 4 of this agreement means.
Okay, yes, we do.
Paragraph 8 says that if we have a dispute about the interpretation or construction of the agreement, the arbitrator will decide it.
Right. Now.
Okay, why isn't that the end of the question?
Because that agreement does not cover the issues that are involved in this lawsuit.
But isn't that an interpretation of the agreement?
It can't be, because the agreement arose out of the lawsuit in which certain claims were made by CPI against Longwell. Those claims were resolved by arbitration, done, over, final judgment and executed on.
You could draft an arbitration agreement that says, look, we're going to be doing business with each other for a while here in the future. This really was an expensive experience, except for this one category. Any other problems we have, either right now or going forward, let's do it the cheap way. Let's arbitrate it. Now, you may dispute whether that's really the cheap way, but
true.
Isn't that a reasonable, it may not be the correct, but isn't that a reasonable interpretation of this agreement?
I think, respectfully, no, for two reasons. Number one, the contract, the CR2A stipulation, specifically refers to, as Judge Spearman mentioned, the, capital T, financial damage claims, the financial accounting claims. Those are claims that arose under that lawsuit and related to things that had happened that were involved in that lawsuit. Secondly, the issues, as I say, in
this... That may be the more persuasive argument. Is that the only reasonable way to read those words?
I think it is. I do think so. I don't think that, right. I don't think that parties represented by lawyers who draft after 14 months of litigation a CR2A stipulation can be construed as doing anything other than having looked carefully at the words that they were going to use, and an initial capitalized term in a document means something, and it means what was said to be meant in there. And that paragraph 7 also specifically excludes all other claims. Now, the second piece, to answer your question, Judge Leach, is that from the complaint we can see that the issues in this case were not, could not, have been raised in that lawsuit. They came about as a result of things happening after that lawsuit was resolved fully.
And what specifically are you alleging in the current lawsuit related to claims concerning financial accounting or damages?
The one of the results of the arbitration, the court decisions and the arbitrations in the CPI versus Longwell case, was that my client, Longwell, was removed as the managing member of this LLC. As the now member, but not managing member, it was entitled to certain rights under the operating agreement. And once it was removed, and before my client's interest in the LLC was sold at a sheriff's sale, there was a period of time within which my client was entitled to receive financial reporting reports, was entitled to receive perhaps distributions from the LLC, had the LLC been properly managed, and was entitled to other things that, other things that the LLC agreement entitled him to receive. So we're talking about the time period after all of the issues were resolved in the CPI versus LLC versus Longwell dispute and before my client's interest was sold. We're only talking about that window. In the complaint, that's what we're alleging. We're alleging in that window of time, Your Honor, there were things that happened when the when CPI was the managing member, that CPI breached its duties under the operating agreement and did not give us the reports we were supposed to receive and did not properly account for the finances of the organization that we were still a member of and for which we still had rights. So it's that time period that we're talking about. We're not talking...
This is a complaint for damages.
It is, Your Honor.
So really, it isn't just reporting. It's got to be that there was some money that should have been distributed to your clients had things been run the way they were supposed
to. Correct, Your Honor. We're asking for not only damages, but we're asking for an accounting as well. But yes.
But the accounting is to show either that money that should have been put in an account from which your client would have received distributions didn't occur or something else funny happened with the income.
That's the allegation, Your Honor, yes. So for that time period, again, it's not... We're not going back to when CPI made its claims against Longwell. We're starting the starting point for our allegations under the operating agreement, which does not have an arbitration clause in it. The starting point is the time period when that relationship changed and all the issues were resolved in the CPI v. Longwell lawsuit. And I think that the reasonable interpretation, I mean, I understand the court's...
You want to put the word only in that sentence, don't you?
Which sentence would that be?
The only reasonable interpretation.
Well, I do think that the only.
You will agree if there were two competing reasonable interpretations of this agreement, the arbitrator would have to decide which one prevails?
I would not.
You would?
I would not agree with that because I don't think there are two competing.
Well, no, I asked you to assume if there were two reasonable ones.
Well, I think that by statute, RCW 704-62, I believe the court is the proper venue, the proper forum for determining whether an issue is subject to arbitration, and that is what the question is before this court.
Well, but how do you deal with paragraph 8, which says that all disputes concerning the interpretation or construction of the agreement are to be decided by binding arbitration?
the judge, Judge White, who decided that this issue was not arbitrable, was not interpreting the agreement itself. He was determining whether or not the parties had agreed to arbitrate this. And in his handwritten language that he wrote in his order, he said the financial accounting claims did not mean that they submitted all financial accounting claims in all cases to arbitration.
Inherent in Judge White's ruling is a conclusion that no reasonable construction of this agreement could have financial claims cover claims that arose after the date of the agreement. Is that correct?
After the date of the agreement, I'm not sure about that. Certainly after the issues were resolved. The issues that were...
Well, isn't that how when they were resolved, when the people signed the agreement?
Well, arguably you could say they weren't resolved until after Judge Lukens issued his arbitration ruling, and there were separate court proceedings after that. But certainly the issues that were referred to arbitration were set forth in that. But I think we've got a different break point here. It's not just the break point of when was this signed. We've got a break point that says, okay, those issues in the CPI versus Longwell case were resolved, dead and gone. We have separate issues that arose after that agreement was signed, after everything was done in that lawsuit, and those are not subject to the same arbitration clause that arose out of the CPI lawsuit.
Did Judge Lukens get asked to decide all of the disputes between the parties or only some of the then existing disputes between the parties?
Only some. Only those that were articulated, and I think significantly, the agreement that was signed by the parties after negotiation with their counsel said all other claims are excluded.
So there are some claims between the parties that were still hanging out there at the time this agreement was signed and matters sent off to Judge Lukens for arbitration?
Arguably no, and I'll tell you why. First off, there were no...
Arguably suggests there's two sides to it.
Okay, no, there were not. I'll take the arguably word out of it. I'll take the qualifier out of that. I will say that in that matter, there were no counterclaims by Longwell against CPI. So there were no claims back in the CPI versus Longwell case. So no unresolved issues having to do with Longwell's potential claims against CPI. Secondly, the second part of paragraph 4, I think it's also in paragraph 4, specifically says that all other claims asserted by CPI are released. So there were no other issues. Everything was taken care of.
Well, it's peculiar that it says only all other claims of CPI and not all other claims of both parties.
And that's because, Your Honor, there were no affirmative claims asserted by Longwell in that lawsuit. We submit that the only reasonable interpretation of this agreement is that these parties did not agree to arbitrate these issues and that the trial court's decision should be affirmed. Thank you.
To address this last issue that we were just that was just being discussed, the other issues that that were not subject to the arbitration clause was the request that CPI pools request that Longwell Arbors be removed as the managing member, and that's addressed earlier in the stipulation.
The parties agreed to that, and then they had some disputes they couldn't agree upon, and those went to Judge Lukens for arbitration. Could any reasonable person conclude that there were some other claims hanging out there that hadn't been asserted in a counterclaim, that weren't referred to Judge Lukens, and were intended to be preserved for arbitration in the future?
No, but that's not my that's not our argument.
This is a foundation question, if you will.
No, because the arbitration agreement is confined to financial accounting claims, and the arbitration agreement describes these financial accounting claims and gives examples of them. Manipulation of capital accounts, improper withdrawals, improper payments to any of the parties. So that's the arbitration agreement relates to those sorts of claims. So we take those examples in the arbitration agreement at paragraph 4, and we contrast them to what Longwell Arbors is asserting here. I'm citing from the complaint. Longwell is alleging that CPI pool repeatedly engaged in self-dealing and improper spending. That's at CP 5. So the question is whether it's reasonable to say that this allegation with regard to improper spending is included in this these examples.
Do you agree that that could only have occurred after CPI took over the management role?
What could have occurred?
The improper spending and pooling of accounts and so forth.
I'm hesitant to describe, I mean, they're not my claims that I'm asserting, so I'm hesitant to interpret what the claims are.
CPI wasn't in charge of any of the accounting and whatnot till this agreement was signed and they took over the entity, right?
Correct.
It seemed to logically follow that the first time they could be fudging on the accounting would be once they took it over.
That makes logical sense to me as well.
Which would then lead us to the conclusion that counsel's correct when he asserts that all the claims in their complaint describe conduct that occurred after the arbitration agreement was signed.
And that is not pertinent to the argument. I mean, our...
Well, you may not think it's pertinent.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next case...